Welcome to The Point. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Mindy Todd. And today we're talking about books, specifically books by and about women, because March is Women's History Month. Joining me in studio is Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library, and Kelly Porter, librarian at the Woods Hole Public Library. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
All right, Jill, first off, first question. Tell us how you approached this topic. You've learned a lot, I hear.
It was a little scary, actually, there to find out how many books have been written since the early days of women's history. I remember the early days of women's history when I was taking classes at my college in women's history, but it was exciting. It was new. It was like, oh my gosh, there are women in history. What a surprise! And now, the biggest challenge of this particular show was how much there is now in every kind of format. From picture books to fiction to nonfiction, every slice of women's history has been sliced. It's hard to believe that anybody can even find another story. And what astonishes me as well is I also remember as a child, I would go into my public library and I was lucky if I found a biography of Martha Washington and a biography of Betsy Ross. I mean, that was essentially the women that were in the biography collection. And now, as I say, picture books and every possible woman is getting written up, and from the most esteemed politicians, and not amazingly any longer are we just reading about wives. We're reading about women who are doing their own things. There is incredible poetry that's coming out of this. There are incredible novels. There are incredible nonfiction books. And all of it is so, there is just so much. I think the problem at the moment is that there is so much. It was really difficult to decide which pieces to bring this morning.
Which is always exciting because that means we're going to come up with some great titles for folks, but there's so much more to explore.
That's right. Absolutely.
And Kelly, how did you feel about going through and combing through and coming up with the selections that you picked today?
Well, I mean, like Jill was saying, there's such, just so much stuff out there right now. So I really did try to focus on like the diversity, too, that's coming out. Because like you said, it's not just biographies of Martha Washington anymore. You can find things from women of all different backgrounds, nationalities, and seeking those things out, I find to be more interesting now with what's coming out. Mm. And I had sort of set a funny little rule for myself. There's a whole spate of books now, both fiction and nonfiction, that have the word girl in the title, and it just bugs me. And some of them are legitimately good books, but I just decided anything that has the word girl in the title, I'm not choosing for my list, just on principle. So that helped narrow it down a little bit.
Well, let's get right into the titles. Jill, how about you go first? What would you like to start with?
Well, what I want to start with is actually a poem. And I had chosen this poem some weeks ago. It is a poem by Audrian Rich called, from her book of poems called The Dream of a Common Language, which was poems from 1974 to 1977. In many ways, it was a real breakthrough volume for her. She had come out as a lesbian. There are these beautiful lesbian love poems in here. But what I did not know until this morning was, and so I'm just even more delighted that I ended up choosing one of these poems, is that actually Audrian Rich died on this day in 2012, just coincidentally. So I feel like she's with us, and that's a good thing to have. And this poem that I'm going to read is called Power. Living in the earth deposits of our history, today a backhoe divulged out of a crumbling flank of earth, one bottle, amber, perfect, 100-year-old cure for fever or melancholy, a tonic for living on this earth in the winters of this climate. Today, I was reading about Marie Curie. She must have known she suffered from radiation sickness, her body bombarded for years by the element she had purified. It seems she denied to the end the source of the cataracts on her eyes, the cracked and separating skin of her finger ends, till she could no longer hold a test tube or a pencil. She died, a famous woman, denying her wounds. Denying her wounds came from the same source as her power. I just love that poem, and I think it says a lot about women and history. And what sacrifices many women made in the course of their histories.
Oh, yes. And across the kind of just everything in all parts of life, not just in their work kind of professionally, as women were kind of allowed into the professional sphere. But yeah, I love how, I love also too how that poem spans time, you know, 100 years prior, but then to kind of more modern. I mean, Marie Curie, of course, lived a long time ago now, but was very modern and working with really modern technology. Right. She was on the cutting edge of this emerging world back in her day.
Yes. Yes.
Kelly, what would you like to start with?
Well, one of the my favorite little discoveries in looking for books is this new picture book called Mary Wears What She Wants, and it's by Keith Negley. And it tells the story of Mary Edwards Walker, who is someone I knew nothing about. On its surface, this is just a book. It's a geared toward preschooler age children. And it's a very simple book about being able to wear whatever you want. It starts off with, "Once upon a time, but not too long ago, girls weren't allowed to wear pants. Can you imagine?" And it goes on to tell the story of Mary and how she decided to wear pants instead of skirts because they were more comfortable, and her parents were thankfully very supportive of that. And, you know, it just goes through. By the end, she stuck to her guns despite the fact that people were making fun of her, and changed the way that people thought about the clothing that girls could wear. So I love it on that sort of more general aspect. But then in the back, there's a nice little biography of Mary Edwards Walker, which makes me want to seek out like a full-length biography of her. It turns out she became a surgeon.
Wow.
She is the only woman to have received the Congressional Medal of Honor. She was captured by the Confederate Army in the Civil War. I mean, she was just this amazing woman that I knew nothing about. And so it was fun to not only have this great little picture book with wonderful illustrations, but then jumps off into, you know, I want to go learn more about this person. Mm. So
866-999-4626. You can also email us if you've got some ideas and suggestions for books to honor Women's History Month. You can email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. And I want to say about the children's book too, I love how more and more you see in children's books, there is a little bit of extra information for us, for the adult. It's not just this kind of one-dimensional little read. It's, like you said, it makes you want to go off and find more about this incredible person.
Right, and it's great for the kids, too, that can just approach it on a very basic level, and then maybe when they're more independent readers, they can go back to it, and they can use it as a jumping-off point as well.
Well, and I have to say, I had the exact same experience that you had with the picture books and discovering this woman that I had never, ever heard of before. And I also have to mention that when I was in school, there was a long period of time when I had to wear only dresses. And it was this huge thing, this huge thing when the students finally essentially rebelled and we were having these, well, the high school was having these, you know, big marches about women, you know, girls should be able to wear pants. And I think about that now, and it's like, that was not all that long ago that they were still forcing girls to wear dresses. And not that there's anything wrong with dresses, but it really astonishes me how recently so much of this history is. So the book that I discovered, and the woman that I discovered in a picture book, it's called A Lady Has the Floor, Belva Lockwood Speaks Out for Women's Rights. It's by Kate Hannigan and illustrated by Allison Jay. Have you ever heard of Belva Lockwood? I had not.
No.
No, I have not.
And she has this astonishing story. As the author says, Belva Lockwood spent her life fighting for equality, not just for women, but for all people. Her clients often were outsiders, widows, veterans, Native Americans, former slaves, who, like Belva, had been denied their rights. She was the first woman to speak in front of the Supreme Court. She wasn't supposed to be allowed into law school, but she did get into law school. And when they weren't going to give her diploma, but they ended up being forced to give her diploma, having gone to law school. As it says in the book, her lamp burning late into the night, Belva read, wrote, and memorized. But the school blocked women from attending lectures and studying with men. One by one, the other women began to quit. When it came time for graduation, the male students refused to sit beside the remaining women on stage. I mean, it's just so astonishing to us now. Although things still,
yes,
of course,
no.
Happen. Yes and no, right. But Belleville hung on even when the school refused to present her with the diploma. And quote, "I was not to be squelched so easily," end quote. And in September 1873, Belleville wrote a letter to the president of the university. His name was Ulysses S. Grant, and he was also president of the United States. Quote, "I have passed through the curriculum of study in the school and am entitled to and demand my diploma." And she indeed gets her diploma and also becomes very involved with women's rights and suffrage and trying to get the vote. She did not live to see women get the vote, but she was friends with all the gals that get to see that women have the right to vote. It's a very beautiful book and has great quotes from her. And again, as you were saying, Kelly, about your book, there's a lot of history about her at the end of the book as well. So if you want more, and there's a big timeline and there's the photo of the actual woman, and really just delightful to be discovering these women in picture books.
Mm.
And her name was Belleville Lockwood, and the book is A Lady Has the Floor.
And I love, too, and this both of these children's books, one wonderful thing, of course, with all this kind of blossoming of literature about strong women. I think of my niece, who's 5, and thinking about the pants story, and I'd love to read that book to her because she, of course, wears a tutu a lot of places. She's a princess, you know. But she's got that freedom to wear pants or dresses or whatever she wants, and that might actually seem foreign. You might have to have a conversation in addition to the book about a woman wanting to wear pants. And the same with a woman saying, "I want to get an education." We're lucky now that my niece may grow up just believing in her entitlement to making choices as she wants. But it kind of highlights the need for books like that to say, well, you know, even recently, or we, you know, things were different. And also, you know, as she gets older, we still have some work to do sometimes.
Well, and it's also fascinating to me, the whole princess thing, and how that has sort of taken over little girls. And I find it very sort of mysterious. As somebody who wanted to wear pants,
like, even that, though, can be complicated, because I mean, I definitely found myself, I have an 8-year-old daughter, so I found myself rebelling against her kind of girly side, which thankfully she didn't have that much. But then it was like, but that's not inherently a bad thing either.
Of course. Right.
She wants to be girly.
Exactly.
We can't cast that as a bad thing. So just, you know, inclusion, you know, everyone can make their own choices.
Right. Exactly.
Those are the good things.
Boys and girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's a good point to make, too, is these books aren't just for women. This isn't the women's book club we're talking about this month. These are books for everybody. Just like we read books about amazing young men, men of all ages doing amazing things. This is now, like you said, it's inclusion.
Right, right. Yeah.
Kelly, what do you want to talk about next?
So the next book I brought is a very, thankfully, slim volume. It's by Mary Beard. It's called Women and Power, Manifesto. She is a novelist and also a professor of classics at the University of Cambridge. And this book came out in 2018, and it's based on 2 lectures that she has given, and she's adapted them into this book. And one is entitled The Public Voice of Women, and the other one is entitled Women in Power. And she talks about sort of tying in with your children's book that you just talked about, Jill, and women speaking in public and just even that act being somewhat subversive. And even now that people react to women speaking, and it's fascinating because she starts off this lecture with the Odyssey and talks about how one of the first women that you encounter in the Odyssey is Penelope, and Telemachus, her son, is telling her that she should be quiet and go back up to her bedroom. And this is, you know, for the men folk to be talking downstairs. And that's, you know, perfectly acceptable for Telemachus to do. And so she goes through from ancient Greece all the way up through current politics. And her one little part is, "My aim here is to take a long view, a very long view, on the culturally awkward relationship between the voice of women and the public sphere of speech making, debate and comment, politics in its widest sense." And she says, I am hoping that the long view will help us get beyond the simple diagnosis of misogyny that we tend to a bit lazily to fall back on. And so she kind of goes through and shows that, you know, it's not just like women sort of hating men, or, you know, it's not as simple as that. And it's this systemic problem of women being in places of power and people's reaction to them. And it's very short, so it gives you like a nice little introduction. And then there is like some further reading you can do in the back, which is also helpful.
Well, yeah. And I have to mention in the picture book I was just talking about, one of the things she does is it turned out the boys were the only ones who were allowed to get up and speak in front of the class. So she decides she's going to let the girls get up and speak in front of the class. And as it says in the book, it proved a success. So Belva brainstormed with Susan B. Anthony to hammer out a bigger plan. Together, they pushed for every school in New York to teach public speaking to boys and girls.
Oh, wow.
Which
Real
was revolutionary.
Yeah. 866-999-4626, or you can email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have Jane on the phone. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. So I wanted to say how great it is. I have a son, and how great it is. There are so many options for book reports. For my son, when he grows up, he's going to say, I can do a book report on Marie Curie or Ruth Bader Ginsburg and want to be those people when you grow up. So that's just awesome that there are so many more options.
Yes.
But the book I wanted to recommend was Lady from Savannah, and it's all about the founder of the Girl Scouts, Juliet Gordon Lowe, who is just a fascinating woman all to herself. She was the first woman to own a car in Savannah. She was known for standing on her head, and she started this crazy movement. So I wanted to put that out there as a suggestion.
Well, thank you, Jane. That's great. Thanks so much for calling in and for listening. 866-999-4626. What's on your mind? Give us a call. We want to hear your suggestions, or you can email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have to take a break, but we'll be right back talking more books about women and women's history. Welcome back to The Point. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Mindy Todd, and we are talking books, specifically books about women for Women's History Month. And with me here in studio is Kelly Porter, librarian at the Woods Hole Library, and Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library. So I have an email here from Fran, who wanted to give us the suggestion of The Only Woman in the Room by Marie Benedict. And this is the story of Hedy Lamarr, beginning in Vienna in the 1930s. And actually, right before we went on the air, we were talking about Hedy Lamarr and what kind of woman she was. And of course, Fran says in her email, she was so much more than an actress, and her intellect and talents will surprise you. And so that's a great suggestion. Thanks, Fran. I hope you're listening.
That's terrific. And Kelly was just
talking
about
that book. Yes, I'll have to get the title of, there was a picture book about Hedy Lamarr that's brand new that I'll get the title for Jill's list. Didn't make the cut today because I had too many, but
yeah.
she's a very fascinating person. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Jill, what do you got next?
Well, the next thing I brought with me is something that's sort of different and fascinating to me, which is it's actually a quarterly that has just started publishing, and it's a quarterly of rare books and words by women. This is called The Second Shelf, as women are traditionally on the bottom shelves, you know, in bookstores. It's about the future of books and women. And one of the fascinating things about this started as a Kickstarter project. And Allison Devers, who is the woman who ran the Kickstarter project, it was buying rare books. And what she was noticing as she bought rare books was that the value of a rare book in a woman's history, was much less than what was being paid for the male authors. She also noticed that it was primarily these sort of elderly white men, more or less, that were buying up the rare books. So they were creating the market. And what she is trying to do now is create a market for women, rare books, and women, specifically women authors, all women authors, fiction, nonfiction, everything. And this is what she described as her goal for this project. She wrote, the future of books is female. Of this I am certain. Women have always written and made great work. Unfortunately, our bookshelves don't equally represent women's contributions. It's not too late to change this. The rare book trade affects everything from women's legacies to world history. These shelves are informed by historically male-dominated book trade and informed by a literary history that is driven by the Western male canon, consumer, writer, critic, publisher, and editor. We want to raise awareness of gender inequality in the literary canon, in our public and private libraries, in our archives and institutions, and even on our own bookshelves. The Second Shelf's mission is to inspire new and established collectors to read and invest in women and help balance the bookshelves. We seek to do this by publishing The Second Shelf, a quarterly of rare books and words by women, and launching an online rare bookstore. Well,
wow.
Up now, she in fact has made a real bookstore. She's opened a bookstore in London that is called Second Shelf, and she is now trying to get people interested. I will say there are, I will try to post the two. She's got two lists of sort of the books she has available right now. So to give you a sense of the incredible breadth of what women have done and written over the ages, her catalog itself, the magazine that is essentially a catalog for what she is selling, has great articles in it. And one of the things she writes is, things are not as they should be. The majority of women writers lose notoriety very quickly after their deaths, for far faster than their male contemporaries. We don't preserve the legacies of women writers in the same way. We don't curate and collect their books with any particular depth of vigor. This, however, is something we can change. And one of the great things about this is I've already found all these women, that writers that I had never, ever heard of or thought I had never heard of until I started looking into it further. For example, one of the novelists she mentions is a woman named Mary Butts. Now, I would have said I'd never heard of Mary Butts. It turns out, in looking into it, I had, but had never read any of her books. And she was essentially out of print. And of course, once somebody goes out of print, it's really hard to find. I mean, you've got your public libraries, thank goodness, and you've got academic libraries. I mean, there are ways to find these things, but it is very hard when people are in the habit of going, seeing, oh, Mary Butts, let's go to Amazon and see what, you know, or whatever other vendor you might use. And if there's nothing there, or there are only used copies, it lessens the value of that author. So Mary Butts was quite a gal, and she authored 12 books in her lifetime. I've just recently read one of them, a novel. It's really strange, but really good. But where I realized I had heard about Mary Butts before was in Virgil Thompson's his autobiography. And he writes not only about, he's got this great chapter in this, not only about Mary Butts, but also Gertrude Stein. He writes a lot about, because he was friends. Virgil Thompson, like, become my go-to guy for finding about these great women that he was hanging out with in Paris.
Wow.
So he hung out with Gertrude Stein. He hung out with the Stettheimer sisters, who I have spoken about Florine Stettheimer previously on this show, because she was an artist, but one of her sisters was a writer. And then another one of the sisters designed a dollhouse, or like essentially took her entire life to design this dollhouse. Anyway, his autobiography talks about all of this, but here's a little bit. I love this line. This is from a letter from Gertrude Stein that he quotes. Poor Godie, Godiva, the car, has lost her stability owing to too many poems and music. She took to dropping little pieces of herself and groaning distressfully, and once had to be disgracefully rocked in front of the Senate, and now I am having a new Ford car, and with the unfaithfulness characteristic of us all, I am violently devoted to the new. Alice is making tapestry in our leisure moments. I am making sentences in my leisure moments, and darn good sentences. Otherwise, as we were. It's just so lovely. I love the sentence.
They're like
making darn good, yeah, darn good sentences. And as far as Mary Butts goes, she was quite a gal as well. And as he says, I used to call her the storm goddess because she was at her best surrounded by cataclysm. She could stir up others with drink and drugs and magic incantations. And then when the cyclone was at its most intense, sit down at calm center and glow.
Ooh,
I just
what
like
a description.
Who wouldn't want to meet Mary Butts, right? Or stay away from Mary Butts. going to say,
depending.
It could go either way. Anyway, I do think the second shelf is a really great step forward in terms of trying to save books and get out the word about all these wonderful women writers that we may not have heard of before.
Yeah, literally creating a new market for all of that literature, that,
exactly.
All that body of work. 866-999-4626 or email us, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Okay, Kelly, what do you got?
All right. Well, I have, it's called The Breadwinner by Deborah Ellis. I only brought the first volume, but there are four books in this series. It's geared toward kids, middle readers, but I would encourage adults to venture into the children's section and check it out. I first read it a couple years ago. It was published in 2000, which surprisingly is 19 years ago. And it follows an 11-year-old girl named Parvana in Afghanistan. And her father is imprisoned, and she has to pass as a boy in order to get food and have the family survive, because it's her mother and her older sister, and I think she has like a baby sibling as well. And so in Afghanistan, girls can't be out without a man. And so it talks about how she needs to cut her hair, look like a boy, and help the family survive. And so there's, you know, a lot in here about the role of girls and women in Afghanistan and what they need to do to survive. It talks about the relationship that her mother has with both the children and with her father. And it's just fascinating. And then, of course, it's, you know, this survival tale. So it's just gripping. And I burned through all four of the books very quickly a couple of years ago. It's a nice view for kids and anyone to see that what it's like in other cultures for women, and a bit of a different view outside of what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, especially kind of in a sense through the eyes of a child into a culture that is complicated and may seem opaque, especially to us as adults who hear, you know, all the stories around our interactions as a country with Afghanistan.
Right. And yeah, I mean, exactly. The fact that it was written 19 years ago, but it's still completely relevant today, is also, I think, just it speaks to how important this series of books is. And it's, you know, it's written by a woman and it's about a girl and, you know, just a strong girl, too. So it's just a wonderful series.
Yeah.
The Breadwinner.
And what would you like to talk about next?
Well, the next book that I'm going to talk about is a very big and dense book. And I have to say, I was on vacation for a week earlier this month, and I took this book with me, and I'm like, great, I'm finally going to have. And I was so mesmerized by it. I didn't want to like do anything else, but I also, by the time, it's so dense, and she has so much information about women in this book that at a certain point, it was like, okay, it's time to go to the pool. I can't read any more of this because there's just so many different layers that she puts together. And what is this book? This book is called Figuring by Maria Popova. And many of you may know, I've spoken about Maria Popova before because she does this great blog called Brain Pickings. And as it says in an article about this book in the Washington Post, Popova is a member of a rare pantheon of influencers for the brainiac crowd. Miraculously, she makes a living writing a blog about science, literature, philosophy, feminism, and whatever else takes her voracious and generous fancy. And indeed, this book that I have in front of me is about science and literature and philosophy and feminism, but it also is about some very particular women that we all know and love, which is it, particularly on Cape Cod and the islands. So there is a big section. Although it's even hard to describe these as sections because it is so interweaved. There is one strand that is about Mariah Mitchell. We know Mariah Mitchell from Nantucket. Caroline Herschel is also an astronomer who I had not heard of, who was also an astronomer. Mathematician Mary Somerville, biologist, environmentalist Rachel Carson, who is clearly having a moment in the world, which is sort of extraordinary, again, given how long ago now she has been gone, but she there's a great picture book on Rachel Carson. But back to Maria Popova, she also has Margaret Fuller in here and Harriet Hosmer, who was a Boston artist, and Emily Dickinson, who was a poet. And everything is connected. And it's not just about these women. Obviously, it is also about all the men to which they were connected. And here's a bit, though, about Mariah Mitchell. And I knew about Mariah Mitchell. I mean, I knew that she existed. I knew I'd read about her, but not in the way that Mariah Mitchell, Maria Popova describes her. She writes, night after night, year after year, Mariah Mitchell would point her steadfast instrument at the nocturne and sweep the skies with quiet, systematic passion, searching for a new celestial object against the backdrop of familiar bodies. One autumn evening in her 29th year, she would slip out of her parents' dinner party to climb onto the roof and station herself at the telescope, wrapped in what she called her regimentals, her uniform of plain Quaker clothing. I imagine this contained young woman surprising herself with a spontaneous gasp when she sees what she saw at 10:30 on that first day of October in 1847, before beckoning her father to the roof to show him the momentous speck she had isolated from the vast cosmic background, a new telescopic comet. And so it talks about her, how she then is elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and instead of the salutation being sir, that's crossed out, and the word fellow is crossed out, she becomes an honorary member, which is handwritten in pencil on her. It's just
in pencil.
These little details about her. And there's this great bit about this speech she gives to her students at Vassar. She says, I'm far from thinking that every woman should be an astronomer or a mathematician or an artist, but I do think that every woman should strive for perfection in everything she undertakes. It's a really fascinating and deep, deep dive into these women's lives. And again, there are just threads that go in and out and in and out. You definitely need a quiet and uninterrupted, turn off whatever device you have. You cannot read this book with a device anywhere near you, because if you do, you will be spending all your time looking up all these little bits that she's telling you about. So that was the other great thing. I was somewhere where there was no internet, which made a huge difference in reading this book, may I just say. There's a little shout out to Woods Hole, of course. Here's the bit about Rachel Carson. One rainy August day during her senior year of college, Rachel Carson laid her blue-green eyes on the sea for the first time. She was journeying to the Marine Biology Laboratory at Woods Hole on Cape Cod, one of the first scientific institutions to regularly invite female researchers and scholars, founded several months before Mariah Mitchell's death. And in parentheses, Gertrude Stein had been one of the 6 women out of 23 students in the institution's embryology class of 1897. The ocean would remain Carson's lifelong love. But I love that, and it is true, if you ever take a tour of the MBL Huey Library, you will see all these photographs of women scientists who were teachers that were brought down to learn about science. So I really can't recommend this book enough. It's called Figuring, but by Maria Popova, but do make sure you've turned off the devices.
866-999-4626 or email thepoint@capeandislands.org. And I have a suggestion from Donna in East Sandwich, who emails with a suggestion for Radium Girls by Kate Moore. And she says, this is a true story about radium and how it was used not only in common products, like dials and makeup, but also how it made women who worked with it in a factory very, very ill. So thank you for that suggestion. If you've got one of your own, give us a call or send us an email. We have to go to a break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to The Point. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Mindy Todd, and we are talking books on this Wednesday, specifically books about women and women in history. And with me this morning is Kelly Porter, a librarian at the Woods Hole Library, and Jill Erickson, a reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library. And we want to hear from you. What kind of books are you reading that inspire you, women's lives, or women authors that you would like to contribute? Give us a call, 866-999-4626, or email us at thepoint@capeandislands.org. Okay, Kelly, what have you got in your hand?
All right, I have a novel that came out this past year by Madeline Carolyn Miller. It's called Circe. And what this is she has taken the character of Circe, who we mostly encounter in the Odyssey. She sort of appears throughout Greek mythology in a peripheral way, but her probably most well-known appearance is in the Odyssey when Odysseus and his men wash up on her island and she turns a bunch of the men into pigs. Odysseus hangs out with her for about a year or so and then they leave. And she plays a big role, but...
I love that summary. Hangs out. Yeah.
You know, she's important in the trajectory, but just absolutely a one-dimensional character, as many of the women in the Odyssey are. And so Madeline Miller has pulled her out and tried to give her a backstory and flesh her out a little bit more and explore. I think I have not actually read this, so I haven't gone through the entire book yet, but, you know, explores Circe's experience of being on the island with Odysseus and what comes of that. And it's just, you know, it's a fascinating premise to explore her inner thoughts, and especially with these, you know, figures from Greek mythology who, especially the women, end up being very one-dimensional. And so it's, yeah, she's... I've heard that it's quite good, and so I think that she's very successful in giving Circe more of a voice, I guess I would say.
Yeah. A fun way to explore powerful mythology that's obviously withstood the test of time and take a look at, yeah, these guys, you said, these characters being kind of one-dimensional, but, you know, there's so much room there to explore the power dynamic and their motivation because, you know, they wouldn't have hung around for a
right.
year if she didn't have something going on.
Right. Last year, there was a translation of the Odyssey by Emily Wilson that was put out, and it was received with much fanfare. And the idea, I think, was that she would somehow, you know, make the female characters more well-rounded. But, of course, she can only do what is on the page. And, you know, it was a wonderful translation, but I came off of it thinking like, well, there was only so much she could do with Penelope or Circe. And then on the heels of that coming out, this novel, Circe, came out, and it was just interesting timing that, okay, now we can fill that out a little bit more and explore what she might have been going through and thinking.
Mm-hmm. Satisfy that urge a little bit.
Right, right.
Yeah. What have you got in your hand?
Well, I have to say, one of the things I discovered in putting together the show was how little I actually like historical fiction, which I don't understand. I really don't know why. And I think that part of it is just that the real stuff is so compelling that when people... But I think it's great that she has put together this book on Circe. But I do find it hard to read historical fiction in general, not always. I mean, there are some great...
You know, at least this is... It's not really historical.
Right.
But I feel the same way. I get confused, too, about what's fiction, what's fact. And
yeah.
Right. And I had actually a pile of historical fiction, and I was like, no, I can't bring any of them. However, what I did discover when putting together the show was this book that I'd never heard of, and yet... I probably purchased it for the library at some point. I order many books for the library. It's called The Unwomanly Face of War, An Oral History of Women in World War II by Svetlana Alexievich. Excuse my pronunciation, translated from the Russian. And this was apparently a worldwide bestseller when it was originally published in Russian in 1985. This work by Nobel Prize winner Alexievich combines hundreds of oral history accounts with the author's own reflections. She conducted these interviews between 1975 and 85, intending to capture women's history of war. There are reminiscences from nurses, doctors, pilots, airplane mechanics, tank drivers, and countless others. And I just opened it up to see what, you know, what exactly was in. And I opened to this particular piece, and I was like, this is astonishing stuff. This is a piece written, an interview with Lola Akhmatova, foot soldier, rifleman, and this is what she says in her moments. You ask what's the most frightening thing in war. You expect me. I know what you expect. You think, I'll say, the most frightening thing in war is death, to die. Am I right? I know your kind, your journalist tricks. Ha ha ha. Why aren't you laughing, eh? But I'll say something else. For me, the most terrible thing in war was wearing men's underpants. That was frightening. And for me, it was somehow I can't find the, well, first of all, it's very ugly. You're at war, you're preparing to die for the motherland, and you're wearing men's underpants. Generally, you look ridiculous, absurd. Men's underpants were long then, wide, made of sateen. There were 10 girls in our dugout, all wearing men's underpants. Oh my God, winter and summer for 4 years. We crossed the Soviet border. As our commissioner used to say at political sessions, we were finishing the beast off in his own den. Near the first Polish village, we got a change of clothes, new uniforms, and for the first time, they issued us women's underpants and brassieres. For the first time in the whole war. Well, of course, we saw normal women's underwear. Why aren't you laughing? You're crying? Why? Just an astonishing thing. And if I had not picked up this book, I would never know. I mean, it's, and that's the great thing about oral histories in general. You discover these little details about war that you would never, ever consider. And this is specifically about women in war, which you don't often see that often.
In their own voices, as
in
you said.
In their own voices.
I mean, that we're kind of giggling at that passage, but for that woman, that was kind of a way in which she kind of framed a pretty horrific experience and remembered this detail of her discomfort, right?
Right, right.
And that might not have survived had someone been writing, had taken that down and then went off and written about it, because they have to frame it. They put it as part of their own framework
exactly.
of how they see things.
Exactly, and that's right. And this, although that's the kind of detail that actually would make it into historical fiction, right?
Yes.
This is the sort of thing that actually would work. And it's full of these kind of little oral histories. That's what it is. And apparently when it was first published, it was edited heavily and they left a lot of stuff out, including things like that. But now the whole thing has been published and again translated into English. The Unwomanly Face of War, an Oral History of Women in World War II. And we don't think that much about, we think about American women that might have been involved with World War II, but not Russian women. Mm-hmm. So very interesting.
Well, and how fascinating, too, with just talking about the appropriate clothing. And, you know, there was just the headline about the all-female astronaut crew that was postponed because they did not have suits
the right
that would
size
fit them.
Suit.
And
yes.
It's like,
which
how
is
are we still
so crazy
with this?
Right. How can this still be true?
So, you know, it's not that far removed from little details like not having the appropriate underwear, you know.
Right. Right. We think we're making progress.
Yeah.
Yes. And so what are you picking up, Kelly?
So I have, it's two books geared towards children again. One is called Rad American Women A to Z. And there's another one, it's sort of a spinoff by the same author, Rad Women Worldwide. And these are just really, again, fun overviews of a lot of different women, some of which you've heard of, some of which you haven't heard of. And so the American Women one is it's written like an alphabet book, but very much for kids who already know their alphabet. And I love the diversity that's in it. It's, you know, it'll be A is for Angela Davis, and it talks about you know, the civil rights movement and gives you a nice introduction into that. And V is for Virginia Apgar, who I knew about Apgar scores.
Yes.
And when babies are born, I had no idea that it was developed by a woman and it was named for her. And so that's just really kind of neat. And the worldwide one as well has such a wide range of women from, you know, environmentalists in Chile. And you've got Polystyrene, who was a British punk singer in X-ray specs. And so just, you know, there's something for everybody in here. And they're all just amazing women. And it gives you that jumping off point as well of like, oh, you know, she sounds really amazing. I'm going to go seek more out. And there, so there's also a, you know, a nice list of people in the back to look for, more rad women worldwide. And just some great information and these really cool paper cut illustrations as well, so it's very graphic and
yeah, I was going to comment on that. Yeah, you can, it's really cool. It's rad.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's not to be underestimated to get something that kids will want to pick up, and it looks really cool, and it's not just like your stuffy old, you know, biography of Martha Washington that's on the
Not that there's anything wrong with Martha Washington, right?
But not to pick on her today, but, you know, it's something that it makes it exciting for kids to approach, and boys and girls as well. So
And most ages. I mean, it looks like it might not be for little kids just by there's a lot of text there. But, yeah, I mean, I'm like, I want to pick that book
up.
Yeah,
no, it's really cool. I mean, just leafing through it, I found myself like, oh, yeah, Maya Lin, she was really cool. And, you know, a lot of people who you might know the name, but you don't know that much about them. And so this is a nice introduction into those women.
Mm. And there has been a big spate of that kind of book for adults as well as for kids. I have actually three of these in front of me because they're just coming out faster than one can keep up. There's one called Little Book of Feminist Saints, which has a great little section on Rachel Carson, but it also has a great section on Shirley Chisholm. And you can also create your own feminist saint at the end. They have a little blank page where you can do your own feminist saint.
And draw the portrait, too.
Portrait of whoever your feminist saint is. There's also Bad Girls. Sorry, Kelly. It does say girls. Bad Girls Throughout History, 100 Remarkable Women Who Changed the World by Anne Shen. And this, too, our woman Rachel is everywhere. I can't believe I said our girl. And is in this intro, it says, this is a book about women. This is a book about girls who had a ton of fear and personal flaws and faced insurmountable obstacles, but did amazing things anyway. This is a book about those who came before us, who knocked up against that glass ceiling and made a tiny fissure or a full-on crack. But what's really interesting about this one, there are a lot of women in here that I had never, ever heard of who are featured. So it's always nice when you learn something new about a woman you didn't know about. And of this group, I think the one I like the best is called Dead Feminists, Historic Heroines in Living Color by Chandler O'Leary and Jessica Spring, with a foreword by Jill Lepore. One of the things I love about this are the illustrations that they've created. And it turns out these two women have been going around making these letterpress posters with quotes of famous women for years and years. And they show the whole process by which they are making these letterpress things, why they're making it, how they're promoting all these women. And in the chapter called Protect, there's a section on our gal, Rachel Carson. But there's just this beautiful poster that they made for Rachel Carson, and they're taking her work and trying to bring it up to date, and that is to say all the various environmental issues there are now. And so the quote that they've put on this gorgeous poster, and I can't even imagine what it looks like in full size, but this book is sort of oversized. The quote is, to stand at the edge of the sea, to feel the ebb and flow of the tides, to feel the breath of a mist moving over a great salt marsh, to watch the flight of shorebirds that have swept up and down the sun lines of the continents for untold thousands of years. It is to have knowledge of things that are as nearly eternal as any earthly life can be. And they describe within the book all the various pieces that they've put into this poster that are somehow connected to, it's actually a broadside, may I say, not a poster. They are indeed broadsides.
Getting technical. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, for example, the broadside is printed in ocean blue as well as a tawny gold representing both Gulf sand and the sickly tea color of spilled crude oil, because that's what they're looking at, is the spilled oil. And they use the brown pelican, who was extremely vulnerable to DDT, populations recovering since the ban was severely affected by the Gulf oil spill. So they're very thoughtful and very political and really beautiful at the same time. The book is Dead Feminists, Historic Heroines in Living Color.
And I want to comment, too, that in looking, of course, we'll put the list, of course, of all the books that we've talked about online. But there's so many beautiful there's imagery and graphics associated with these books, not just the picture books, which we kind of started out with, but with all these other books, too. They're just really compelling. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to see a lot. And you're going to remember a lot. We are out of time. I want to thank my guest, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library, and Kelly Porter, a librarian at the Woods Hole Library. As I said, we'll have that link to the books we talked about a little bit later today on our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Mindy Todd, and I want to thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.